Hey everybody, welcome to part two of our Halloween double feature, Psycho 3. We'll probably be making reference to our previous movie, so if you want to hear our review for Psycho 2, and you know you do, download part one of the episode and listen to that first. Thanks so much for listening, and welcome to The Hold Up.
Each month, we pick a movie one of us remembers fondly but hasn't seen in years, we watch it, and we decide, does it hold up? I'm John Longino.
And I'm John Nelson.
And welcome to part two of our Psycho Halloween October special.
Wow, that was a mouthful. Good job.
I try. What can I say? Maybe sometimes another personality just takes over and I speak for him and, you know, have crazy thoughts.
He's more interesting than you are, this other personality.
It's true.
Hi, everybody. True. Welcome to part two.
So we watched Psycho 2, as you well remember.
We did. And surprisingly, both gave it hold up votes. So
I know. In some kind of miracle. Bowling for Columbine. Nope.
Fuck that
Psycho
shit.
Two.
Psycho 2.
Yes. Yay. Doesn't make sense to me either. But here we are.
This just demonstrates the incredibly relative sliding scale of the hold up podcast, folks.
It's almost like a mood ring.
The shitty movies that sort of impress us, we're like, yay, you get a pass. These really well-made movies that sort of vaguely disappoint us, no, boo, fuck you. You have let us down for the last time.
Well, the sliding scale is correct, because it's not like a, it's all relative to the film, right? It's totally based on our expectations beforehand, which are completely personal and totally shift all the time.
Yeah.
And then the quality of the movie based to that pre-expectation. So, you know, Bowling for Columbine, really high expectations, didn't quite deliver. Psycho 2, incredibly low expectations, exceeds them. You know, I would say Bowling for Columbine's a better movie than Psycho 2, but it didn't hold up. Psycho 2 did.
But here's the question. Would you want to watch Bowling for Columbine or Psycho 2 again?
Oh, man.
Yeah, see?
Neither? I don't know. Well, I don't know. Maybe I'd probably sooner watch Psycho 2 again because I've only seen it one time.
Right.
But I think eventually if it was like you're stuck on an island and you can only pick one of these movies to watch forever, I think maybe Bowling for Columbine. But
yeah, that makes sense.
That's where I'm at.
I could see that.
But now we have to figure out where Psycho 3 falls on this bullshit sliding scale of ours. Mr. Nelson, you have said that you remember Psycho 3 fondly. Let's start off here with, what is Psycho 3?
Well, you have not seen it.
That's correct.
Correct. I have. I've seen it one time, way back in the halcyon days of the 90s. And because I have seen it, I have at least the vaguest notion of what it's about. Why don't you tell me? You gave us the prediction of what you thought Psycho 2 was going to be about, and then you gave us a vague prediction of what Psycho 3 is about. I'm allowing you to now revise your prediction. What is Psycho 3 about, John Longino?
Well, if you go back to what I said that I thought Psycho 2 was going to be, you can insert that here, and that is what Psycho 3 will be. I think Psycho 3, now that we've established the end of Psycho 2, Norman Bates is back to mother and he's holding his mom and he's full psycho. This is going to, I think, be a very straightforward Norman Bates is a killer again. People come to the motel and get slasher murdered by Norman Bates.
Right.
I would love to see this movie have aspirations to be some kind of meta super mystery like Psycho 2 was.
Right.
I'm not really holding my breath on that one. I think that would be kind of ridiculous, but you never know. Mystery is a part of Psycho. Maybe they'll go back to the mystery well, but I think it's just gonna be straight up Norman Bates killing people. Now, who he's killing is an interesting question. I mean the easy answer is like people coming to stay at the Bates Motel,
whoever gets in his way. Yeah.
But I don't know, there has to be some plot beyond that. It's not like people just check in and they get murdered and that's that.
Right.
So, I don't know. I'm going to guess maybe, I mean, he literally committed murder at the end of Psycho 2. Maybe there's some unanswered questions from townsfolk. What happened to mom at the diner? She literally was married to a guy. So I would think or hope that he would want to figure out what the fuck happened to his wife.
Right.
So maybe it's something like Norman Bates is killing people, or people are investigating his past and putting it together that this other woman was his mother. and trying to figure out what happened that the last movie.
That would be interesting if they actually connect the last movie to this movie.
One would hope.
Well, I think they were separated by a few years. I don't know this for a fact, and we don't research any of this because we're lazy. No, that's part of the show. But I think Psycho 2 came out in the early 80s, and I think Psycho 3 came out in the late 80s, or at least latter 80s.
So we're talking, what, 4 or 5 years, maybe 6 years?
Possibly longer, yeah. Okay. So I think it sort of falls into that post Freddy Krueger has gone sort of funny.
You know, okay.
There is sort of a point in the mid-80s where, like, slasher films were serious, and people would be like, well, they're laughing at the gore, or they're laughing at people getting their heads chopped off or whatever. But there came a point, and I think it, you know, kind of tilts on Freddy Krueger in Nightmare on Elm Street 2, where he's suddenly wisecracking and he becomes, you know, the monster becomes like the hero of the movie.
Yeah. And certainly by Nightmare on Elm Street 3.
Most definitely by Nightmare on Elm
Street 3. He's full comedy. And I'd say if you were looking at, you know, Friday the 13th, I'd say Friday the 13th Part 6, Jason Lives, is certainly when it's like full shark jump crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. They went all the way around the bend, though. And that they had no other choice, and it was lovely for
it's
that.
It's a fabulous film.
It is. But yeah, I think there was a shift in the great tone of the 80s slasher film, and everybody was funny and wacky, and suddenly all these monsters had to not only kill people, but they had to make wacky quips. That's what I vaguely remember. It's Norman Bates now sort of being a funny murderer.
Okay. Was he like, welcome to mama's house or some bullshit like
no,
that?
No, I don't. Well, I mean, I don't think Anthony Perkins would. He directed this one.
Oh, okay. As
I thought he may have directed the last one, but I think Process of Elimination. I know he directed one of them.
Sure.
It wasn't the last one, so it's got to be this one. Yeah. I don't think Anthony Perkins would approve of Norman Bates being that kind of so I'm guessing the comedy takes place around him. The example that I think of, it's one of the only scenes in this movie I actually remember. Somebody has been killed. I don't even know if Norman has done it or not. I assume he has because he sees it, but like he's reopening the motel and he's added some modern accoutrement like an ice machine outside. And it's one of those like big ones where they lift up the doors and
sure.
You can fit a person inside. Which somebody has. So there's a dead corpse in the ice. And okay. I don't remember. The sheriff comes along, and I don't remember if he's the same actor. I'm hoping he's the same actor from Psycho 2. But the sheriff comes around saying, oh, somebody's missing Norman. And at one point, he goes over to the ice machine, and Norman's sweating. As, oh, my God, what's he going to do? And the sheriff lifts up the ice machine lid, absently pulls some ice out and starts chewing it, and there's like blood on the ice, okay, and he's sure. just getting closer and closer to the bloody ice, and Norman is just like, oh my God, please don't catch me. That's all I remember.
Okay.
That's it.
That literally is it. You don't have but any other memory.
I feel yes.
I mean, obviously it's at the Bates Motel.
Right.
We know that.
Yes. But. Well, obviously. I mean, I think memory serves, you're correct. Norman Bates is back killing people again. But I feel like because he's now sort of ostensibly the hero, there's going to be reasons that people die. It's not going to be like Psycho where it's just like, well, he's a killer and, you know, the heroes might be sympathetic or they might not.
Now, is he a hero in that the people he's killing are annoying and we want him to? Or
that's what I'm guessing.
Okay.
I don't know this for a fact, and I'm hoping they don't kind of go that route. But my guess is he's at least more sympathetic than the people he's axing, so that's, you know, that's all I'm guessing.
Okay. I will say I am looking forward to, and one of the things I learned from watching Psycho 2 was I really enjoy watching Anthony Perkins play this character.
Absolutely. 100%.
He's fantastic as Norman Bates, and I've only ever, until kind of we did this bold experiment, I've seen Anthony Perkins in, I think, 2 movies. I've seen him in Psycho, which obviously I remember incredibly fondly.
Right.
And then he's in Murder on the Orient Express.
Oh,
the old, like, 70s one.
Nice.
He's part of that cast. And then even, I actually remember in that movie, they have, like, a nod where he talks about his mother or something, like, kind of off the cuff.
Great.
In a way where they might as well, like, slow zoom in on him, and he's like, mother, you know.
Wouldn't hurt a fly.
But I haven't seen him in a lot of movies, and so even though this is undoubtedly going to be kind of crappy, I mean, I'll just straight up, like, it probably won't be that good. Seeing him, I'm in for that. Like,
yeah, absolutely. But another piece of interesting trivia, the guy who wrote Psycho 3, the screenplay for Psycho 3, Charles Edward Pogue, he also wrote that movie Dragonheart.
Oh, yeah, sure.
The one that all the...
Sean Connery and yeah. Who is Dennis Quaid?
Yeah, mm-hmm. And the music that all the movie trailers used.
Yes. Na, da, 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 da.
I actually met Chuck Pogue a couple of times at different like screenwriting things, and he talked a little bit about Psycho, and the way he described it was, well, of course, you know, you take the, you know, when you're a young writer, you take the jobs that you can get. And the way he sort of convinced himself to do it was like, well, maybe I can make this a love story. You know, poor Norman Bates, he's always on the outside of love looking in. Maybe I can make it a love story. I don't remember how that
didn't go so well the first time.
Yeah, exactly. I don't remember how that plays out, but that's
interesting, because there is a level of, in the first Psycho, him and Janet Leigh are kind of having this flirty thing. I mean, I don't think he would have a chance with her, but there is this weird level of like, he seems into her and
right.
She's in this vulnerable spot. I could see that going that direction.
Well, and I also just realized too that like the whole of Psycho 2 was setting up that like Norman understands his psychosis now. He knows that
yes.
He's a killer. He knows that his mother personality is a part of himself, that he is manufacturing this, that his mother's not actually alive. Now, by the end of Psycho 2, the boundary has sort of kind of bled over. But I'm wondering if there's kind of that meta element as well, where he's sort of like, yeah, people are getting murdered. And in the first Psycho, it was like, oh my God, my mother's killing people. That's what he would tell himself. Now I'm wondering if he looks at it and goes, oh, I'm back to killing people again. That's
sure.
Fucked up.
Well, we could even debate, you know, at the end of Psycho 2, when he slaps his mother over the head with a shovel. Is that the mother?
Right.
Is that Norman? My impression was that's actually Norman Bates committing murder.
Right.
Because he wants his mother back.
Which would be the first actual murder that, quote unquote, Norman Bates has
exactly.
done. Because all that before that was his mom. So...
So yeah. These are all questions that I'm sure will be thoroughly answered in Psycho 3.
Well, I mean, even if it sucks, even if they address those questions, wouldn't that be kind of awesome?
Yeah.
I would give it a point just for that. Maybe not the points that it needs to hold up. But
because he does have to kind of evolve in some way.
Right.
I think it's good that the second movie puts him in a different look. He's out of a mental ward. He's aware of his issues. You know, you can't just do the first one again, right? So.
Right.
I wonder if this one's going to be just back to the well.
Right.
He's like, well, here's Norman Bates from the original Psycho. Same bullshit. I mean, obviously it wasn't bullshit
sure.
in Psycho, but like same shtick.
Right.
Well, or are they going to do something different?
Well, now that I'm thinking about it, they must have at least one sort of different element, which is Psycho, of course. The first Psycho, he was a young, handsome actor, kind of a boy next door.
Right.
By the, you know, late 80s, dude has obviously aged, and I think that they're going to have to accommodate that age difference. So it's not like he can be attracted to, like, you know, Janet Leigh again and have it not
sure.
be creepy anyway. So, and I mean, they could go that way, but, you know, I would think that they would make allowances for his age gap now.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder how that'll go.
I think before we even guess how it's going to do, we should do a murder guess. Like, how many bodies?
Ooh, how many bodies?
It's got to go up, right?
Well, of course. Because
the first one has what? Two?
It's
Miss Crane and the investigator
and the investigator. Yeah,
that's it.
Everybody else lives.
The third one.
Well, I mean, if you want to count Mother, that's a third one.
Sure,
so three.
Sure. Yeah, in the
Vegas
sure,
sense,
posthumously.
Well,
sure.
She does have a body there. I mean,
that's fair. That's fair. And then the second one, it's definitely more than that. It's like Vera Miles and her daughter and
the kid who climbs into the window.
The kids.
The first kill, which is.
There's NYPD Blue.
Right. Oh, yes. Dennis France. That's a mother.
Yep. So that's like five.
So all here's right. what I'm going to say. I'm going to say nine.
Oh, wow.
I'm going to go for the precision of
it's
nine.
It's like a murder every 10 minutes, basically.
Basically.
Okay. I think nine is that's a little much. I think I'm going to go with six.
Six. Okay. That's
I think
a safe
six.
Bet. You know what you should do? You should do Price is Right. One. There's one murder.
One murder.
Yeah.
All right, John. Do you think Psycho 3 is going to hold up? And why or why not? Nelson, stop hitting your head on the microphone.
There's no way, right? I mean, it can't, right? I mean, the fact that Psycho 2 held up is already...
psychotic.
More than I could, more than I should have been allowed in the first place with this dumb bullshit. So, no, I don't think it's going to hold up, but I hold out hope that it's going to actually surprise us and that it will and that I'll come back. But even if it sucks, I like that the Psycho 2 held up and it gave me hope for this one. I like that going into this, I'm not sure, because I think you were pretty positive that neither one was going to be any fucking good.
That's correct.
So now there's room for doubt.
Surprise, surprise. I'm going to throw a curveball and I'm going to say holds up, and here's why. Not as an actually good movie, but as a really fun watch. I'm thinking this
one... I hope it's that, at least.
I think this one's going to be so dumb that we're going to have such a good time that it will be... It'll cross the threshold and hold up. It's a terrible wager. I'll probably be wrong, but you never know.
Hey, man, even if it's just watching Anthony Perkins being Norman Bates one more time in true form, not like, oh, I'm just doing this to get a little bit more money for my insurance... I'm all for that. I'm hoping he alone will save this.
I hope so as well. All right, folks, here we go. We're going to go watch Psycho 3, and we'll be right back.
The guy just wants to be left alone in peace.
Aren't you going to take him in for questioning or anything?
Just leave him alone.
Norman Bates is back to normal. But Mother's off her rocker. Again.
Norman, is that you?
Yes, Mother. It's me.
Bates Motel.
Aside from total boredom, nothing's gonna happen to you here.
I can't have that sort of thing going on in my motel. Here's the place a bad name.
To me.
You remind me of someone.
Mother!
I figured Bates was a geek, but a full-fledged Looney Tune?
Norman!
I'll get you for this, Mother.
You haven't got the guts, boy! It's perfectly natural for a son to love his mother.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have returned from Psycho 3. The subtlest, low-key film of intro. Welcome back, Nelson. What? How you doing, man?
I'm great. I'm awesome. How you doing?
I'm okay. I gotta say, for one, I was awake the entire time.
Yeah,
happy to report again.
In a flashback to a previous episode, he used the 5-hour energy shot that I gave him. For Bowling for Columbine.
I did it. Now, perhaps it wasn't necessary considering some of the more outlandish things that happened in the movie. Probably would have kept my attention regardless.
Probably.
It was nice to have the safety.
Yeah, it was a little bit different than watching the Psycho 2, because during Psycho 2, Longino was genuinely like, now, okay, wait a second. Now, if this happens, then that maybe is happening. He was genuinely trying to figure out the mystery. Yes. This one, he was like, Jesus Christ, what is that? Which is its own kind of fun.
Yes, I would say the conspiracy board was replaced with just my befuddled expression. I think at one point I was like, what is this, Naked Lunch? Or like it was just like completely crazy. Like it was like a psychedelic crazy. It had more to do with like Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas than it does Psycho. I mean, I don't know. It was something. I honestly don't even know where to begin. Like, where do we start with this one?
Well, it was a love story.
That's true.
We weren't wrong about that. It was a love story. And the interesting. Okay, so just as a here's what it's about, because now we can reveal it. Basically, it's a couple months after Psycho 2. You know, he's killed his mother.
There was continuity between films,
which
I did appreciate.
They actually did a couple of different things to establish continuity, one of which is they show, like, scenes of the Bates Motel, like the exteriors of the Bates Motel. And one of the things that John called out right away was like, oh, hey, because it was a book just lying in the dirt.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, hey, that's in the belly of the beast. That's what the girl was reading in the last movie. That's kind of cool. The one that got killed.
Yes.
So, yeah, that was a cool thread to connect. So Norman's, back to killing birds and stuffing them, and you know, back to his old tricks again.
No, so, all right, not only stuffing them, but using a what was it, like a knife or spoon to well, put the stuffing in.
He was putting the sawdust in and
taking a scoop of peanut butter and eating it at the same time. Like, that was our introduction.
With the same spoon.
It was like bird death sawdust spoon used to lick peanut butter. And I was immediately like, okay, what the fuck is happening here?
Definitely, a, like he says, a less subtle movie than Psycho 2.
Actually, that was not our beginning. This movie begins...
Start at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah. Let's set a scene here. So we get ready to watch the movie. We're like, all right, here we go. Bates Motel, Psycho 3. Look, let's do it. Hit play. Literally, it's like black screen, and then all you hear is, "There is no God." You're like, what the fuck? And also, we're in a church in a bell tower with a nun who's about to jump to her death screaming about how there is no God over and over, and then all these nuns come to like look after her. "Are you okay, sister?" And one's like, "Heretic, this is heresy." And another's like, "Come on, step down, like, please come with me right here." And she's like, "No, there's no God, there's no God." And she flails her arms. This old lady nun goes flying down the
shaft.
The shaft of the bell tower to her death. And then everyone's like, "Oh my God." And then the angry nun is just like, "You're going to hell for this forever." And I'm like, what movie are we watching? Like, had nothing. Norman Bates is nowhere to be seen.
Yeah.
It's just nun murder and suicide. Like, what? Talk about a strong opening. Like,
yeah,
wow.
Well, I mean, what better line for a Psycho movie to open with than "there is no
there
God"?
Is
I mean,
no God.
That's possibly like the most astute already? Thing. Yeah. Every, and then you have an extended, you know, the nun who looks a lot like Janet Leigh, doesn't act as well, but she looks a lot like Janet Leigh.
Well, I mean, her costume and haircut look like Janet Leigh. I think that the comparison sort
maybe,
of begin and
maybe that's
there.
Where the resemblance begins and ends. Yeah. And then, so she's... she leaves the convent in shame. She's carrying her suitcase, which has the initials MC.
Yeah,
which
is like almost an identical suitcase as Marion Crane from Psycho.
So she hitchhikes.
To the point where I was having all these conspiracy theories. Like, I was like, is this Norman Bates' mother? Or is this right. a flashback? I was trying to like understand what was happening and why we were seeing it.
Which would have been awesome if Norman Bates' mom was a nun at some point in this narrative.
Well, it reminded me of there's that Freddy Krueger movie that opens with Freddy's mom. Being like assaulted by 1,000 psychopaths or whatever, his kind of origin story. And so in my brain immediately went to like, oh, this is like some tee up to Norman's past.
Right.
And then this modern day beat up car pulls up. I was like, oh, I guess not. And I just kept trying to correlate it to like, how does this tie into the movie? And so that was kind of actually interesting. Just be like, I don't know where we're going here, like, but like, I'll just go along for the ride.
For 60 seconds, Longino got to indulge his you know, conspiracy board. And then Jeff Fahey, the face of the 90s. And I'm wrong, by the way. I thought this movie was came out in the late 80s, early 90s. It was 1986. I looked it up. So much earlier than
mid-80s.
I thought. Mid-80s. Yeah, mid-80s. And Jeff, very young Jeff Fahey.
Absolutely.
With the sharp, piercing blue eyes. He's very handsome. Pulls up in his...
He was like 21 Jump Street ready. Like,
I know.
He's basically ready to go.
Seriously, him and Johnny Depp could solve crimes together. But he pulls up in his beat-up car, you know, picks up the hitchhiking Maureen... What was her? Coyle?
Yeah, Maureen Coyle.
Maureen Coyle. Picks her up in his car... they drive for a little while, and he yaps on and on.
Gets real rapey real fast.
There's the obligatory 80s. She falls asleep in the car, and so he feels the need to rape her, and he doesn't quite make it because she wakes up and runs right to the Bates Motel. But not before he gets there first, gets a job with Norman Bates, and go. So, and then basically Norman sees... the Janet Leigh lookalike, and everything spirals from there.
Yeah, it seems to, I mean, it is sort of what we talked about. It's this very much more traditional Norman Bates is a murderer and let's watch him kill people. They did do this thing where they kind of still kept him out of the light and didn't really show him full like mother outfit until kind of near the end of the movie.
Right.
Which actually at one point caused us to sort of speculate like, is the killer someone else? Because it was kind of open.
Yeah, we were about 3/4 of the movie and we're like, well, this is so standard that it can't be him, right? I mean, that's too obvious, right? But, so it's got to be, you know, they got to be picking up the threads of the second one where it's like the lady reporter who's trying to prove Norman Bates is still crazy. Maybe it's her or it's Jeff Fahey's character.
We kind of started looking for twists and turns in our just in our own mind. Because I think the way thematically they kept it shot similar to Psycho. And in Psycho, they're trying to hide the fact that it's Norman Bates. So I think just by virtue of the aesthetic,
right,
it kind of lent itself to mystery and maybe a kind of a false speculation on our part that there was something else going on. But no, it's pretty tried and true. It's just Norman Bates is mom killing people.
Killing the ladies.
They sort of take back the twist of the previous movie
by
having the reporter say, oh, this woman told you she was your mother, but she's lying, and actually your old mom is your real mom. And
So they retconned the retcon. Yeah. And so,
which, frankly, I'm okay with, because that was the one thing that I was like, that's kind of dumb. But
the weird thing is, though, when the way it was revealed, I was kind of like, it wasn't that I want the aunt to be the mom or whatever the, you know, the case is, but it was so ham-fisted, and it was just sort of a like, well, we're going to fix that little mistake that Psycho 2 made so that the canon can be reestablished here. And I'm just like, there was no better way to do that than, no, she's not your mom, she's really your aunt. Well, no shit. I mean,
I know we're kind of jumping around here, but we do have to take a moment to talk about Fahey's Room of Horrors, I think. So, what was going on, John?
Jeff Fahey shows up at the Bates Motel, gets a job pretty instantly because Norman's got a help wanted sign in the window, and Jeff Fahey's like, well, I guess I'll hang around and make a couple bucks because I'm a musician and my name's Dwayne, but you can call me Duke and whatever else. And then at one point he picks up a girl at a bar, and then you cut to them, you know, enjoying his room that he's been in for maybe 12 hours.
And I mean, and working a job,
and working the job. Yeah. He has somehow managed to put up collage wish boards of naked ladies and porn.
It's full like Buffalo Bill. Like, it's just,
yeah,
like,
he's got like
cutouts and
red
everything.
Filters on all the lamps. And you know, the girl is naked and licking the walls, and he's got lampshades spinning near his groin area.
There's just a scene where he takes this girl home from the bar, and then it cuts to the room, and you know, I'm ready for like, okay, they're hooking up or whatever. Yeah, it's literally just hard cuts to him naked on the floor, holding two different lampshades pointed at her while she makes poses. And it was like, what is happening? It was all this drug haze, like weirdness.
It was the weirdest thing in the movie, and that's saying something.
It was like, okay. And by the way, when it got to like both murder time and I think in this scene, they had this aesthetic of like the soundtrack was full, just, I think I called it Wicker Man. Like, it was full, yeah, like demon chant. It sounded like Sauron's like dark elvish, like Haz Nazgûl, like there was this weird like devil chant.
It was real Rosemary's Baby shit, man. I mean, it's like, what?
Like,
I mean,
what?
I understand
doing?
You can't be using Bernhard Herrmann into the ground here, but just like, I mean, really, huh?
That's... Well, it was this angels and demons thing where like they have this nun and she's talking about there is no God, and then, oh, by the way, we're just jumping all over, but whatever. It's like the nun like checks into the Bates Motel, gets into room one, is taking a bath or a shower, and then Norman's ready to come in and murder her.
Yeah, because mom's
his
talking to him
tradition.
And saying, kill the slut.
Yeah, kill her. And then she's like, slit her wrists.
Yeah.
Full on committed
he
suicide.
Whips open the, you know, in a you know, redoing of the original Psycho, he, you know, rips open the shower curtain, and the girl is just looking up from the bath with a tear in her eyes. I'm sorry.
But the movie gets really weird because she starts hallucinating and sees Norman dressed as mother as the Virgin Mary holding out, and she sees the butcher's knife as a silver crucifix and thinks she's getting like a message from God. And it's just like, what is happening? And it's part of why she's this romance we're talking about. The whole movie, she's kind of into Norman, sees her as her savior. They go have a ballroom dance.
Well, right,
because like
he not only does he not stab her, once he finds that she's tried to commit suicide, he takes her to the hospital, which is a kind of clever reversal.
Sure.
So,
and she's like, thank you, Norman, for saving me. They literally go on a date, kind of hook up. They go back to the hotel. They're making, this is literally a day after she fucking almost killed herself.
Right. And you go back to her room, and they don't want to, you know,
like
ruin
high school
it.
Sweethearts.
Yeah.
Like,
they don't want to ruin it with sex. So they just kind of, you know, lie in the bed kissing and then fall asleep and then, she wakes up later and Norman's gone because, you know, he's got to go kill a co-ed. But
yes.
Oh, yeah. And then they have like the fucking football games come to town and the entire hotel's just full of like drunk 30 somethings that are acting like they're 12. Like,
it's, well,
it's just
homecoming. So, okay. So that's
like,
were
they supposed to be college students?
I think they were supposed to be like grown ass people who keep coming back every year.
Okay.
Because Norman had it on the calendar in the beginning. He's like, oh, homecoming is coming up. That's going to be a busy time.
Got it. So this is like a traditional thing. Okay.
Yeah. And so there's all these, you know, grown ass people running around yelling football, football, football. And then one of them, for some reason, keeps going into rooms and saying, hey, you left the door open. Hey, you left the window open. Hey, you left the door open. And for some reason, that it disturbs Norman that she keeps closing doors and windows. So he stabs her to death on a toilet.
Which, honestly, it was like the movie felt like we needed a murder. So yeah, and enter random people that are there just to get killed, basically.
Oh, so what was the final count? What? How many people died?
Oh, okay. All right.
Let's do the math here.
All right. Well, let's count the nun at the beginning who felt her death.
That counts.
That's one. I don't know if we do the attempted suicide. We'll get back to that in a second. But then there was this woman that the like icebox lady that got killed on the toilet.
But there was somebody before that too.
There was the woman that Fahey brought over and was hooking up with. Yes. She got stabbed to death in the telephone booth.
Yeah, she goes out to the telephone booth, keeps taking her clothes on and off because she got the tags in the wrong place.
Yep. And just gets brutally murdered.
And then brutally stabbed by mother.
So and then Fahey himself. In this scene that, like, by the way, is the craziest. So, like, the cops are kind of on to Norman because all these murders are going down.
Yeah. Women are disappearing, and so they, for some reason, go right to the Bates Motel.
Which, by the way, sub note, it was hilarious that the sheriff and all of the local authorities, like, hardcore defended Norman Bates against this reporter that was snooping around.
Yeah, and whenever somebody would say, well, I think it's Norman Bates doing all the killing, the sheriff would be like, you sons of bitches, how dare you?
He was basically like, you leave that poor man alone. He's been through enough. People came messing with him. He would never do anything. And I'm just like, this man fucking murdered people, like, what are you talking about?
And I think it was the same actor, though. Says,
same sheriff from two.
Yeah, so continuity.
Literally, we're a week removed from 15 murders going on there previously, but he's like doubling down on Norman's innocence or something. Very strange. So, but then Fahey, I guess, to protect, this makes no sense at all, but the cops are on to him. So Fahey steals mother away on a hunch,
right?
On a lark, like he's just somehow got in the house, took the body, brought it to his fucking sex dungeon room. Norman figures
his
red
sex dungeon.
He gets a note from mother that's like from the script or something. That's like go to room 12. He shows up, and then they have this like Colonel Kurtz, like Apocalypse Now psycho standoff where.
Because Fahey is naked.
Yeah, Fahey's naked, covered in. He's got red like lights on.
And he's bathed in sweat.
His whole plan is to shake Norman Bates down, being like, I know that you're the killer and here's your mother, so I won't tell anyone and you have to sell off your property and give it to me.
I have no, there's no reason for me to think this plan will go awry.
Yeah, so of course he kills him immediately. And so then Fahey gets killed. So now we're up to, I think, five. And then the girlfriend lady, the nun who tried to kill herself, comes in to kind of forgive Norman and start a relationship with him, and due to some happenstance falls down the stairs and knocks her head onto a statue.
Exactly like Psycho.
And then, except minus being stabbed to death, just has this accidental death. So I think she was the last one. I think that's six.
Did the reporter live?
She lived. Which, by the way, Six was my guess.
Was Longino's number. He pretty
much nailed it.
Right on the dot. So,
yeah!
Good for you. If I think of three others, I'll bring them up.
But the
yay,
movie,
Longino did it.
In case it's not clear, the movie was nuts. Like, it was so strange.
Goofle bananas. It was crazy. And then, so here's the thing about Dwayne / Duke / Buffalo Bill. I read the trivia. Originally, I guess, I don't know if this was what they started production with, but it sounds like not. But in the original script that Chuck Pogue wrote, it was supposed to be that Dwayne was doing all the killing.
It was a, like,
Right.
It wasn't Norman all along. It was someone else.
Yeah, it was this guy who wanted to emulate Norman Bates. Like, he came to the motel, like, specifically to
emulate
Norman
Bates. So
that's
why he has this scene where he's, like, stolen mom and is, like, totally crazy?
Right. So they just, they said, well, he can't be the dude. We need Norman to, you know, Universal said, nah, Norman's got to be the one doing it. And he's like, well, should I take out all the weird sex dungeon stuff? Nah. Just make him kind of goofy.
That makes a lot of sense because he's basically a predator. That makes the first scene make a lot more sense where he's kind of assaulting this woman in the car and all.
Right.
Now he just comes across as an idiot dick.
Right. Yeah, just a dope who kind of keeps lucking into things. Actually, what's funny, there was this good, I don't know, there was a moment near the beginning when it was the follow the five, as John put it. There was this $5 bill that kept round robining around from right. person to person, and it paid off. But the funny thing is, like, because John had paid such attention to it. Anyway, let me just, okay, so what happens is, where does it start?
It's from the nun.
Okay.
She pays for her room.
So the nun pays for her room with $25, and Fahey takes the $5 and pockets it because the room is actually only $20, so he lied to her. Then he later on gives the $5 to the woman he hooks up with for quote unquote cab fare, but really it's a whole thing of, you know, look how powerful I am with my wiener and
just
whatnot.
Being an asshole.
Yeah. She goes out to the phone booth, gets stabbed to death. Then Fahey goes into work the next morning, and the fiver is in the till again.
So thus, we presume that Norman, when he was cleaning up the crime scene, was mindful enough to take the money.
He's learned his lesson from the first Psycho movie, never ignore the money.
Yeah, he left thousands and thousands of dollars, but $5 is like, we don't want to lose that. Like, better put that back.
Can't let that go. And the funny thing is, like, John was really invested in, like, why do they keep focusing on this $5? Because it's got, like, a burnt-off corner, and they keep focusing on it. And then
it
they finally...
important, so I was like, okay.
You know, and he called it. It's like, oh, here's the payoff. But then it's like, oh, Jeff Fahey knows that, you know, Norman did it. It's like, well, that's kind of disappointing.
Yeah, it was pretty... He was like, oh, this is a $5 I had earlier. I think Norman Bates is suspicious.
Like, okay. That seems a little weird.
No shit, man. Like, you don't need that to do that. Like, it's like he's just suspicious because it's a fucking murderer.
Right.
It's not this gotcha. Like, he literally has a body in his house. Like, you're going to be like, gotcha, $5, motherfucker. Like, come on. Like, dude's a killer. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, that was kind of... There's a lot of, like, weird... emphasis in this movie.
I wonder if that's a holdover. It's interesting you say that there were script changes,
right?
Because I wonder how much of, like, that kind of stuff is just random weird holdovers of things that used to be more significant but got written out or changed, right, or something.
Yeah, I couldn't tell. I haven't read the original version, so I have no idea. And you know, these things, of course, change all the time.
Well, because the movie kind of feels like a fever dream, like, I, you know, and it doesn't make much sense. I mean, it makes enough to get by.
Yeah.
But there's things, weird things happen for seemingly unknown reasons.
Well, I feel like it's sort of like weird things happen because it's like, well, just the standard story. It's as if Anthony Perkins knows, well, Norman just going nuts again is not really enough to hold this narrative. We got to do some really kinky shit here to keep people interested.
It's definitely the most sexual of the movies that
come
out. Like, well, they literally, his, like, jack-off hole that he peeping Toms through, his, like, where, you know, where he's looking into room one. I think in the original movie, it's, like, a fucking owl or something. I don't remember. But this time, it's, like, a half-naked woman being assaulted by two, like, devilish men.
Hands on crotches.
Yeah. And it's and the music's going, like, Hon Jin died on that. While Norman Bates is, like, fondling the photo and looking at it. And he does this thing constantly in this movie specifically where he looks at people and does this, like, lip wiggle, like, tick thing. I guess it's a tell for when he's about to murder somebody or something.
When mother's coming out.
Yeah. And that was like, okay. I mean, but what's weird is you had all these weird moments and then it would have these very overt references to the original movie, like just straight up jack shots.
Yeah.
Like, oh, the eye hole shot, or, you know, the like cover my mouth after the murder, like, mother, what have you done?
Oh, yeah. You they know. Even like the first murder happens. You see him up in the window and you hear the mother. Oh, God, yeah. Mother.
For blood.
Yeah.
For
just exactly. But the funny thing is, it's not as enthusiastic. It says, oh, mother. Oh, God. The blood. Not that bad. I'm exaggerating. Sure. But it does sound sort of like, yeah, it's sort of like Psycho, right, guys? Yeah. Come on, everybody.
And actually, no joke, it got to the point where Nelson and I were literally saying things before they happened in the movie.
Yeah,
like, that's how. Like, there was a line where she was just like, I feel the nun who tried to commit suicide is talking with Norman in the parlor with all the birds and stuff. And she says, like, I just feel like I went mad. And I hear her say, I literally watch the movie, just go like, we all go a little mad sometimes.
Yeah. And then Norman stutters around the bush. And then he says, well, we all go a little mad sometimes.
We all go a little mad. And there was one you had, too. I'm trying to remember. Oh. You just straight up called a line. Like,
yeah, I forget what it was. Well, there was at least three or four of those.
But there was all moments. That kind of, if you know anything about Psycho, you could just, it was like right by numbers, basically.
Like, yeah, it was, that was the thing about this that I was like, I think he was trying to do what the second one had done, which is like, well, here's a shot from Psycho. But the second one, as we discussed, would take a shot from Psycho and somehow use it to its own advantage.
Yeah, kind of like, subvert it or change it a bit.
I mean, or it would duplicate the shot, but it would mean a different thing.
Yeah.
In this second movie's context, this one, it was just like, remember the shot from Psycho?
Yeah.
I mean, they
served the same purpose.
Yeah. And
so
I mean,
it just felt kind of rehashed.
Yeah. And maybe it didn't start out that way. Maybe he was trying to do a different thing and Universe was like, nope, can't do that, Anthony. So, but yeah, it ends up just feeling like, oh, well, we have seen this and oh, it's in color. That's nice.
Sure. Well, they try, about the only thing they try to subvert or alter is they have this thing where this reporter is trying to take him down and is clearly there on a mission to expose him. But then, at the zero hour, when her life's in danger, and she's wielding a tire iron and calls no backup in for God knows why.
And sneaks into a person's house because breaking and entering has always worked so well on the Bateses.
Then her plan is to save Norman? Like, all of a sudden, in the heat of the moment, she's trying to reason with him.
Yeah, she's like, Norman, your aunt is your mother, and your mother is your
aunt. And she's like, there's all this exposition that the audience needs to know, so Norman, now I'm going to try to reason with you and tell you how your mother... is actually a real mother and your aunt killed your father. And then somehow this gets through to Norman. And instead of brutally killing her, he like stabs mother's corpse.
Right.
In this, like, you didn't think I had the guts. Cause that's something that mom always said was like, you don't have the guts to kill me, Norman. And so he decapitates this corpse and stabs it to death. And then he's like caught. They're taking him away. And he goes, well, at least they're like, Norman, they're never going to let you out.
Yeah, the sheriff is all really let down. That's which is
sheriff. I had your back, Norman. Like,
honestly, that's one of the funniest moments of the movie, because John and I have been making fun of this thing the whole, like, the sheriff is just the biggest rube in the whole movie, just standing by this dude. And at the end, we're like, we could call it. We're like, oh man, the sheriff's going to be so let down by Norman. And he comes out, he's like, Norman, you really let me down. Yeah, and we just like, start
how
howling.
Could you, Norman? How could you, 500-time murderer, actually kill people?
It's kind of great, though. It's I kind of love that they just, like, went through with it. It's like, there's no... I mean, I love that the sheriff is the one defending him, and that they're like, yeah, that's... I mean, we never would, so let's just follow this through to its inevitable conclusion. But then, yeah, he says, you know...
He's like, they're never letting you out. And he's like, at least I'll be free. I guess the connotation being he is... freed himself from this mother spell.
Yeah, mom's gone again.
And then about 2 seconds pass, and then he's in the car driving away, and he reveals that he's holding mom's severed hand, and he starts petting it and looking at the camera. And I just was immediately like, he was cuffed by police officers? Like, they didn't see
he's pocketed a fucking arm? They're like, just so disappointed in him that they didn't notice that he had a corpse arm hidden under his jacket.
I guess not.
Well, we looked that one up, too. We're like, this has got to be a reshoot, right? And so, yep. Universal's like, we need kind of a twist ending. It's like, that's not a twist. That's just stupid.
Yeah, it was basically this, like, oh, I'm still Norman Bates, and I'm still mother, still here, or something. I don't know. Like,
well, whatever.
Yeah. I gotta say, for a whole plot that revolves around the nun getting her home scene at the top of the movie and coming all the way there and then falling in love with Norman Bates and then being told he's a murderer and forgiving him and still wanting to be, for all of that to end with like, oh no, I'm falling down the stairs, like,
right, exactly the way the, like, private what? Investigator did.
Yeah, like, I,
well, because that was the
thing. A lot to invest in for so little.
The mirror of that scene is when the private investigator in Psycho comes into the house and Norman pushes him down the stairs and he dies.
Yes.
Which, I, you know, again, this doesn't subvert it. It's just like, oh, he accident. I mean, the only subversion is, well, it was an accident. She falls down the stairs because Norman accidentally pushes her, but she still dies, and it's still, I don't know. There's something, again, about that, like, reference to Psycho that instead of making it like a, oh, holy shit, that's even more demented and ironic and fucked up, it just made it sort of like, yeah. Right, okay.
Well, it's also, to invest all this time in this weird devil and angel, like heaven and hell concept, to literally have Satan music and have her think she sees the Virgin Mary and all that. Like, I felt like that was, I don't want to say going somewhere, but like it felt insignificant. So to just kind of dispatch of her haphazardly,
yeah,
about all you get is, oh, ironically, a cherub angel is like, with a, it's Cupid actually, with like a heart, you know. So right. I don't know if the message is like she fell in love.
Hurts.
Yeah. Love killed her, or it's an angel and she died by the angel, or like, I don't know.
There is no God.
Actually, that is a pretty good message if that's the movie. It seems to be the theme.
Well, and I feel like they were playing with that theme, but they really did sort of, if they were going for that theme, then they sort of just let us come to it on our own by the end. They're sure. Not like hitting it nearly as hard as they are in the first half, which, I mean, I either A, yo, thanks for crediting us with intelligence, or B, it's like, nah, you got to follow through here, bro, because, I mean, that's some heady shit. Yeah. You can't just let that one go and hope that we get it. I don't think, but... Yeah, I mean, I feel like, I don't know about you, but I was sort of halfway through the movie and I was still like, I was on the precipice of like, this is all right. It's kind of goofy and fucking weird, but I'm kind of with it. I kind of feel like they're they're just different enough, and yeah. But they're just kind of silly enough, and there is that sort of sense of humor I was talking about, you know, that mid-80s slasher films has. It wasn't quite the same. It wasn't one-liners like that crap deteriorated into, but there was a lot, you know, that ice scene that I talked about, yeah. The ice dispenser scene, that was there. Really played up for yucks. Sheriff's like taking, I had forgotten, he's like, not only is he taking ice out like near blood. The corpse, there's blood all over it, and he just like rams it in his fucking mouth, and he's covered in blood, his mouth and his hand, nobody notices.
Norman even goes like,
hoo-wee,
like he just got away with it.
He almost does a take to the audience, basically does a take to the audience with like, yeah, that's kind of fucked up, huh? But yeah, I don't know, there just came a point where it's like, It either didn't go silly enough, or it just, you know, okay. Well, it tried to get serious.
Sounds like, I don't know, we're heading down verdict way. Does Psycho 3 hold up?
Well, I'm going to say no.
Okay.
But credit where credit is due, it wasn't as bad as it could have been. I mean, it could have been some real trash. And the fact that there was even a halfway point that I was still sort of invested in, I don't, you know, give it a pro. I mean, the thought that it was going, that both of these movies were going to hold up, it's like, come on. I mean, even if this movie was good,
now,
I feel like...
Now, hold on.
I feel like...
Hold on, Mr. Nelson, because my verdict is, while Psycho 3 is not a good movie, I'll be clear, there's a little Fahey asterisk next to this movie, and I got to say, the scenes in his fucking hotel room were so insane.
Mm-hmm.
And not only that, I forgot to mention the irony of Norman Bates beats him to death with his own guitar that
yes.
he's been
well, that,
pimping the whole movie.
That was pretty funny.
And there's literally scenes where he's like in steamy, hot makeout and a woman knocks his guitar when he's like, everything stops. He's like, baby, don't touch the guitar. The whole movie is like, I'm a rock star. That guitar in the back, the guitar. Better than the $5 thing. The guitar thing paid off gangbusters when Norman Bates beat him to death with it. I was like cackling laughing. I thought that was so great. So I got to say, it's not good, but I was super entertained, more than I was in any way expecting to be.
Interesting.
I was laughing my ass off. And it was so nuts. I mean, between the there is no God, the nun dies, this devil chanting, and heaven and hell, and Fahey the murderer, and all, like, I think it held up. Like, I'm
wow,
it is worth watching. It really is, because it's so fucking crazy.
That's funny. I brought these in with the vague hope that one of them would hold. Longino, you gave both of these movies a hold up.
Yes.
We only had one non-hold up, and that was me in this movie.
That's right.
Out of three out of four.
That's right. Well, it's kind of, and it's funny we're talking about 80s slashers movies, because it's really easy for me to put on those pair of shoes. Like, that's, I was like, people in a hotel, everyone's game to get murdered. Oh, look, for basically no reason, this person gets hacked to death. Like, I was kind of into it for that. Hmm. And the man, that Fahey shit, he was, man, what? By the way, he had a line in this movie that I just couldn't even believe, like, where he's basically hitting on the reporter.
Oh, right.
And she turns him down and he goes like, baby, you're about as warm as a cry for help. That, I was like, what?
That actually really does get
there are
special
layers
props
to that line. Like, not only because he literally a day prior was assaulting a woman and stuff. So, like, okay, like, it's what a line.
And now,
like,
he's all offended that a girl won't give him the time of day.
No bigger turnoff than the girls that scream for help when I'm assaulting them. Like, both those actors, I'd say Fahey and the woman that played the reporter and obviously Anthony Bergens, were probably the strongest.
Yeah. Although he was a little more goofy this time around.
Yeah. Yeah. It wasn't, I mean, obviously Psycho, he's phenomenal. In Psycho 2, I think he was still pretty good. Maybe because he was directing, he was a little off or something. But yeah, he was a little jokey.
Yeah. I mean, it was strange. You know, he was still great to watch, and I'm glad that we actually did watch him. But he was mugging a little more, I guess, is maybe the best way to describe it. But, you know, I don't care. He's still great.
I mean, the whole movie was mugging. I mean,
sure. And compared to the fucking nutso Jeff Fahey running around naked in his hotel room with flashing red lamps, I mean, he's practically, like, subtle comparatively with his mouth twitch.
That guy was in a Coen Brothers movie. Like, I don't know what was going on with him. There's something to that character. Like, what a weird character.
It was. Well, I mean, if you know that, maybe my character's going to end up being the one.
Sure.
I mean, maybe he's still playing it that way. Maybe no one bothered to tell him they changed the ending.
Yeah. I get why they didn't do that, though, because the last movie, you pulled that trick.
Sure.
Of, like, you think it's Norman, but it's not.
Right.
So you can't do that a third time. Like, that's just crazy. Is it wrong that now I kind of want to see Psycho 4? I mean, it's probably terrible, right?
Like, this is a bonus episode.
I'm just saying, like, I've come this far.
Hey, man.
I got to see it through, right? I don't know if we record it, but, like, I
don't know.
Maybe I'll report back.
If you're throwing down, I'm ready. Making a triple threat. I'm ready to go.
Oh, dude. Maybe.
Well, speaking of the real thing, what are we doing next time around, John?
Well, for November, Mr. Nelson, I was thinking, this one I've been thinking about doing for a bit. It's a little movie called Memoirs of an Invisible Man. John Carpenter film.
But
Chevy
not a,
Chase.
But not a horror film.
Not a horror film. And I haven't seen it in a long time, but I think that one would be interesting to do.
And I've never seen it, so the shoes are on the other hand now, Kramer.
Excellent. So join us in November when we watch Memoirs of an Invisible Man. In the meantime, if you would like to send us an email, please send it to holduppodcast@gmail.com, or you can go to holduppodcast.com. There you will find links to our Facebook page and our Twitter account, or you can visit us on Instagram @holduppodcast. And John, until next time,
nobody move. Jeff Fahey is nuts.